Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today's episode is sponsored by BetBright, where you can join today, deposit 20 and play with 70 across sports and casino. Once again, I'm joined by Mohammed Butt, the chief writer at Squawker. How's it going, mate?
I'm a bit depressed the World Cup's finished. Oh, I need to be honest. But it was a fantastic game. World Cup's over. One last shout for World Cup!
And then we've also got the editor of Squawker, Mr. Will Hall. How's it going, buddy?
Yes, not too bad.
Excellent. And my name's Thomas Rooney, by the way. And also, we've got Peter Welch from BetBright once again. How's it going, mate?
How are we, lads? Nice to be here again.
Yeah, it's good to say. A bit of a somber mood. The World Cup's over, but transfer window, Premier League carnage, and a bit of World Cup reflection for us today. Going to come to you first, Peter, actually, just in terms of the World Cup final, obviously France, the World Cup champions, reasonably comfortable victory in the end against Croatia. What did you make of the game, and sort of is that good or bad news for you on the odds front? And how did you make, you know, what did you make of the final in general?
Well, firstly, it was a fantastic World Cup overall, wasn't it? We had a treat of 4 weeks of fantastic football. If you bet France, to bet right at the start of the tournament, they were 6-1, but drifted out to sevens during the group stages. And then looking at yesterday's final, they went into the game rightly favourites, 10-11, but drifted out to 23-20 during the match. I think they were worthy winners overall. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're disappointed we couldn't get into the final. But if we'll look back and think this is a very, very, very good France side. I think they've got a lot of class to show in future tournaments as well. Just looking through the spine of their team, it was unbelievable. And then you got the sort of flair of Mbappe and Griezmann. There's just so much quality throughout that team. Defensively, they were solid throughout. Mbappe and Griezmann get a lot of the headlines as well as Pogba, but they've also got lots of Kante, Varane, and Titi, Hernandez, Pavard. You know, the list of names throughout that side goes on. For me, they were worthy winners in the end, and a joy to watch.
Absolutely, I think we can't disagree with that. Mo, what did France have that the other sort of contenders were lacking? Because to me, it looked like they had a couple more gears to go as well at some point. I don't know.
They had the best squad in the tournament. That's what they had. I mean, we were saying this before the tournament. They have. They could have sent two 11s out there, two different 11s, and both would have been able to compete for the tournament. They had incredible squad depth, and I think that's just what eventually saw them over the line, the sheer individual talent and hard work in the team. I'll get into the tactics of it a bit more later, because I've got a very interesting little observation that I noticed. But no, look, they had very, 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 very good players, and that just saw them over the line in the end. It wasn't so much anything Deschamps did. They just had excellent players that really wanted to win the World Cup and really worked hard, worked together to do that. I mean, and you know, and they got some lucky breaks, you know, with Cavani getting injured, and with whatever the hell Armani was trying to do when he saved that first Mbappe shot. Mm-hmm. You know, and Meza not passing to Messi at the last second against Argentina, it could have made it 4-4. They got some lucky breaks, but they, you know, all champions do.
So I was going to say, yeah, sort of you wouldn't expect to win the World Cup without a few things going your way here and there. Will you do you think they're deserved winners in the end?
Yes, definitely. Over the course of the entire tournament, consistency was one of their stronger assets. I would definitely go along with the opinions given by Peter and Mo. It was a question of the amount of talent and stability in the spine that gave Mbappe that platform to produce as many wow moments as he managed to do over the course of the season. And as Mo says, squad depth, being able to bring on Tolisso and Nzonzi.
Exactly.
In the last sort of 20 minutes, half an hour of the game. Yes. I think Croatia didn't, despite all the talk of tiredness, I think they only used two of their subs. Mm. You know, that's quite telling, I think.
And just Mo as well, just you reasonably critical of Deschamps throughout the tournament and with his subs, but his sub of taking Kante off actually reasonably seems to get him a bit of control back, actually.
That was genuinely after bringing Matuidi into the side, that's the second biggest thing he'd done in the tournament, and it was a brilliantly astute sub. I mean, it wasn't astute, let's say. I mean, it was kind of the obvious thing to do. Kante was playing terribly for some reason, which I've never seen him play that badly before, except when he played Busquets against Spain.
First time he's looked tired.
He just looked awful. He looked and he goes on a yellow card, and then it was like he was going to get sent off. Rakitic especially was giving him the runaround. He was going to get sent off. It was sensible, but it was a very smart change to bring on Nzonzi. Nzonzi is a magnificent midfielder. Frankly, they could have won the World Cup. Probably would have played better football with Nzonzi in Kante's place, you know? Nzonzi is a miraculously really good footballer and so underrated because I actually have no idea why he's underrated. I guess black playmakers don't really get the appreciation they should do. He's phenomenal. And yeah, it was a very, very good sub from Deschamps. I was impressed that he managed to not mess that up. But then, of course, he brought on Fekir at the end when he should have brought on Dembele. But it was, look, yeah, the thing, France won the World Cup, good for them. This is not Spain 2010 or Germany's 2014. There's no legacy coming from this World Cup. This is more like Italy 2006, Brazil 2002. It's more great players won the World Cup together.
Potentially still to come, their legacy, I guess, because this team will be together for some time.
Yeah, with a better coach, yeah. Because the thing is, there's no style. The idea behind this team, as I'll come to it now, it's basically the 1998 side with new players. They play the same 4-3-2-1 formation. You know, the defence is the defence. You've got Kante is Deschamps, right? Pogba is like a souped-up version of Kadamba in this side, occasionally with that flashes of Zidane. Matuidi is basically Emmanuel Petit. You look at how they play, very similar. Griezmann is obviously Djorkaeff, very hard-working, very gifted playmaker. Giroud and Gavache, I mean, everyone's been drawing those parallels already. And then Mbappe isn't Zidane. Mbappe is a different kind of player. He's their X-factor. He's more of a pacey forward, kind of like if you'd put Henri into that starting line. But then that's okay because Pogba is then much more of a footballer than Kadamba was. So Pogba takes up more of the Zidane role, and then Mbappe just becomes his own sort of thing. And it's the 1998 team. It's what he won the World Cup with as a player. So he's just gone back to it as a coach. And it's, you know, there's no stylistic thing you can sort of bring from that, because it is just putting great players in a very solid system and letting the one or two exceptional ones you have win the tournament for you, which is what happened. France were very, very solid defensively. Mbappe, Pogba and Griezmann won them the World Cup.
Mm. And just on that note, Peter, I don't know if you've got you think their standout player was during the tournament, because Pogba's got a lot of credit in the last few games. Obviously, then there's Mbappe's been praised throughout the tournament. But there's anyone particular that you thought was their best player and most important player during the tournament?
Well, when it comes down to a World Cup winning side like we've seen with this France, the France team, I think unless you have an absolute freak of nature who's firing on all cylinders like Ronaldo or Messi, you know, in their absolute prime, I think you need more than one standout player or one key guy that they have to rely on. So in terms of France's most important player, I think it's hard to put your finger on one. Obviously, Mbappe's got the headlines this World Cup. His pace, flair and goals has been absolutely vital for them during the campaign. You've got the likes of Griezmann, who's as much as, you know, when if you're a defender looking at that France team, you fear Griezmann as much as you would Mbappe, I think. But then again, you have the likes of N'Golo Kanté, who's been instrumental, well, not just for France, but any team he's been in. And then again, we've seen much more disciplined Paul Pogba during this World Cup. I think he's really stamped his mark and kind of proved his doubters wrong as well. So, I mean, you can even look at someone like Giroud, who led the line, didn't get a shot. I don't think he got a shot on target throughout the tournament. But without him holding the ball up like he did, allowing the attackers.
Exactly, that's it. The key three players, I think, down the spine were Pogba, Varane and Mbappe for different reasons. Varane, obviously, the thing is when you're playing a defensive football like France, where you need to have an incredibly solid, stable defender. Like Umtiti's a phenomenal defender, right? And I think he was better in the final and the semi-final than Varane was. But Varane is this kind of... no one talks about Varane when he plays well, because you almost don't see it. He's just there. He heads the ball clear, intercepts, does things very simply, keeps his head, keeps his cool. He didn't play even remotely badly. He was 7, 8 out of 10 every single game for France. And absolutely incredible. Whereas Umtiti had to, he gave away that stupid penalty against Australia, looked kind of ropey in the Argentina game, not quite, you know, but then here, much better. So up and down with him, but Varane, very solid linchpin. Pogba, because he ran midfield, it's like he was disciplined and committed to help Kante defensively, which is what they needed. And then he also carried the ball, strode out of defence so well with the ball, and his passing was outstanding. He was the one that unleashed Mbappe. He was the one that, in all games, I mean, his goal last night, he's a great goal, great finish, but it started because he played like a 40-yard, 50-yard pass to Mbappe. You know, so he was there, everything. And then I think Mbappe, because again, when you're playing this is why I kept saying to bring Dembele on, because you look at the way France played the World Cup. I know he played Giroud because in his head it was like, we need a number 9, but the way France played the World Cup, they were very clearly putting everyone in their own half and smacking it forward to Mbappe to run on the break. And he was doing it by himself, and he's phenomenal, so he can do that. But if they'd had Dembele where Mbappe was and Mbappe where Giroud was, they would have had two guys running on the break, and they probably would have scored a lot more goals. I know they won the World Cup in the end and Deschamps happy, happy, happy. But if they played it on the break with two really fast guys, we saw yesterday how fast Griezmann can be when he runs at tiring opponents. And Dembele is even faster than him. So if you have two guys, maybe three if Griezmann goes forward, running on the break like that, France could have been a lethal side. But as it was, they just had Mbappe, and I think he was essential. Griezmann, shout for Griezmann as well. His set pieces were really important for them. Assist, created the opening goal yesterday. Assist in the opening goal, the goal against Uruguay, Croton goal, the goal against France. So, you know, he was kind of like France's Kieran Trippier, if you will. You know, from open play, yeah, he was okay. But what he really excelled, scoring, he was like Harry and Kane and Kieran Trippier in one person. You know, taking set pieces and scoring penalties, you know.
Yeah, it certainly was most important for them in the end. Just, Will, on Deschamps, he's not the most, his fashionable manager. No. Do you think that maybe changes now? Because, I mean, he's one of three men to win the World Cup, both as a player and a coach, with Beckenbauer in 1990, Zagallo in 1970. So, I mean, he's got to get a load of credit, even though, to start with, they weren't playing as good a football as they possibly could.
Definitely not. I think in one sense, Mbappe kind of dug them out of a hole there, because looking at their underwhelming initial performances, he sort of reintroduced that fear factor that allowed their game management to be so effective later on during the tournament. I don't think this is going to make Deschamps a more fashionable manager. I think he's very much of the Mourinho stock. The proof is in the result. And, I mean, the result is as good as it could have been.
I mean, yeah, so, you can't really argue with a...
So it's going to be one of those where no one's going to be writing blogs on why he's tactically underrated. But there is always the sort of... the photo of Deschamps holding a World Cup trophy that's going to
become... As a player and a manager, I think he'll take that over people sort of finding him fashionable.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Not at all bothered. Just in terms of Croatia, obviously, Peter, first of all, we've got to talk about the handball incident, because I've heard about nine different opinions, spoken to people in the office this morning. So, what do you think? Do you think it was handball after the VAR decision, and how crucial was that, do you think, in the, you know, what happened next? Because obviously France got... you know, dominated from then on, but at the same time, that handball decision goes the other way, and who knows?
Yeah, obviously, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I think it's a penalty.
Yeah.
I feel for a while now that the rule needs to change. So very simply, if it hits a player's hand or their arm, then they should be penalised. I don't think, you know, there's probably about 10% of actual handballs are deliberate.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we make it as objective as we can, it takes away all the debate, it takes away all the kind of the grey area surrounding the rule, and it just makes things much more clear. I think it'll probably it'll make the game slightly more exciting. We'll see more penalties and we'll see more goals, hopefully.
Teams
feel hard done by it if there's a... I mean, the way in which the decision was given, I think, you know, was it clear or obvious for the referee? No, because he had to look twice at the VAR or the screening. So you can feel a bit sorry for Croatia, because in the rules of the game at the moment, you know, it was a very grey area, and therefore maybe you could argue that it shouldn't have been a penalty. I would have, you know, it's one of those where you've seen them given, you've seen them not given, and I think, you know, if you're a Croatia fan or a Croatia player, you can't think, what if? You have to kind of crack on with the game there.
I mean, Croatia did excellent to get to the final. I thought they were really, really good value. They gave France one hell of a game. They were in it right until like just the hour mark when Pogba took over. But look, you know, and obviously on the one hand, they weren't a hard done by, because they did amazingly just to get there, and that France are a better team than they are. But on the other hand, they were bossing the game. Rakitic was the best player on the pitch, and they got two shocking decisions against them. Griezmann literally falls over for that first goal. He passes the ball off and just jumps to the ground and waits for the guy to run into him while he's falling. And that's a blatant dive. And I can't believe VAR looked at that and thought, yeah, that's a foul. It's not a foul. He's very clearly... Anyway, that shouldn't have been a free kick. So that's where they go from. And the second goal, I mean, look... Whatever the rule should be, and I actually agree with Peter, I think you should change it to just, if it's a handball, it's a handball. But that's, by what it currently says, is that's not a handball. By the current rule, his hand is like down by his leg, he's jumping, and the ball is hit, the ball goes by a defender who's literally a foot in front of him. You can't, when you slow it down, it looks bad, but you watch it in real time, you can't react that quickly. It was a ridiculous decision, and it was... The fact that VAR got them both wrong, I thought was really just unfortunate for VAR, because they had a good tournament so far. But
do you think, my thinking with VAR is that as soon as the referee's been told to go and look at it, in his head he's probably thinking he's made a mistake and missed something?
Yeah.
Do you think that comes into it, Will?
Yeah, it introduces an element of pressure where you have to justify the whole process of going over to a monitor.
Exactly.
I mean, imagine the pressure and like that gets sort of whipped up when your referee sort of just stood there watching, staring into a screen in a stadium of people having
this
quiet
moment. He came back again, didn't he?
A private moment, just sort of like looking
into.
It's
basically when the referees go to a screen. I always just assume that the decision's been changed. I assume that the referees the referees are saying, look, you have to come look at this, it's different. The VAR have told them it's not what he said it was. Mm. He has to just go over there, stare at it for 5 minutes and go, yeah, all right, I guess.
Also, when you're looking at an incident in slow motion, it just completely transforms it. How many times have we seen sort of like minimal... So a player's running at speed and he gets a slight knock. And then slow motion makes it look like he's gone down very easily.
Yeah.
It doesn't reflect the true nature of the game, which is played at some pace.
Yeah, exactly. When you're moving at pace, everything is much different. Like again, the Perisic handball I think is a great example of that, because slowing it down, you look, oh look, he's moved his arm towards the ball. Mm. That's a handball. But then, you know, this is like the PK handball where his arm is way up in the air by him. So it's like, even if it is just literally a microsecond, you can't even look at it. What is your hand doing up there? Get your hand down. That's obviously a handball. That's different. This is like his hand's down by his side. And yes, it moves down by there, but you have to look at his whole body moving in that. It's not like he just jerked his hand down by his side. It looks that way in slow motion. If you watch it in fast motion, he's jumping. His hand moves down by his side as a natural extension of his jumping movement. And that's why it's a penalty. And it's like, that's just nonsense.
I do think as well, I have some sympathy for the sort of counter-argument that it's not VAR that gives the decision.
It's
the referee. Mm. And that's been held up as a defence for the system.
Mm.
But you can't completely unpack the incident and just sort of think, oh, VAR's not influenced that there. Because, I mean, he's had as we've said a minute ago, he's had the VAR team in his ear. Mm-hmm. He's watched it in a way that's inconsistent with sort of the in-game flow and everything.
Also, VAR is just referees, isn't it? That's the thing. It's just different referees. It's not like it's a technology thing like goal line technology. It's just more referees. So it is the system. The system is referees. So it's like, I think it's a bit disingenuous. Like, oh, it was just the ref decision. But that's what VAR is. It's just a different ref decision.
Mm. Yeah, it's like a team decision, isn't it?
Yeah, right. And I mean, that's fine. But I just think it's ultimately a useful tool. As we've seen this World Cup, it can be very useful. It can ward off cheating. A lot of players, apart from Neymar, were hesitant to really sort of fling themselves
you
around.
You kept forgetting it was on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he was just like rolling all over. But Griezmann showed that you can still con the system, because that was a blatant dive and the refs didn't give anything. So it's useful. I think it can improve the game, but I think there's still a ways to go before it's anything like as seamless and as functional as goal line technology, which is just the ultimate example of technology in football, which is perfect.
I was going to say, because it's a bit of a shame that there was an incident like that in the final, really, because it's quieted down a little bit and everyone was kind of getting on board of it, and then suddenly this happens. But I mean, we'll finish by saying France were probably deserved winners, though. A couple of good goals after that, Mbappe, and overall you can't really argue that they were the best team in the tournament, can you?
No, you couldn't really.
So France, World Cup champions, congratulations to them.
Hey, congratulations to my son. He picked France to win the World Cup before the tournament. And I was like, are you sure? Are you absolutely certain? And he was like, yeah, they're going to win the World Cup. And
there we go.
So there you go. He's a genius. But smarter than me, apparently.
Okay, next up, just going to have a bit of a World Cup review. Obviously, a month of action-packed stuff. Lots of ups and downs for various teams. France obviously won it, as we just discussed. But then the Best Player award went to Luka Modric, losing finalist. Peter, I'll come to you first, mate. Do you think he was the best player in the tournament? And if not, who do you think was slightly hard done by? Anyone on the France team you think should have got it?
I think it's a case of taking your pick, isn't it? Obviously, Modric is getting all the limelight when people talk about Croatia, and he's obviously won the Golden Ball, and probably rightly so. You know, a player of his calibre in the Croatia side, he basically was instrumental in getting them that far. So, you know, Modric, you know, clearly a right winner. But I think without the relentless efforts of Mandzukic and Perisic in that Croatia side, I don't think they would have got to the final either. So I think, obviously, Modric is getting all the plaudits, but those two players themselves, again, should definitely get a mention. You know, they chased every ball, they never gave up, they scored at crucial moments for the country. They really did impress me. So Modric, I think, worthy winner, but those two definitely need a big shout-out. Again, Mbappe was a standout for France and throughout the World Cup. Put his stamp for the world of football, and I think he's given us lots to look forward to in the future as well. He obviously won the young player of the tournament, but I think I wouldn't have been surprised if he got the golden ball as well. I also mentioned last week how impressed I was with Ronaldo when Portugal were in the competition. Obviously, they were knocked out relatively early. But I have to mention him. I think he was absolutely superb while they were in the tournament. And it's a real shame that the rest of the Portugal side weren't anywhere near his level, because I think he really wanted to and probably would have done put a stamp on the tournament. I think that golden ball was his for the... Well, he thought it was his for the taking. It's a shame we didn't see much more of him.
He missed the penalty against Iran. It's his fault. If he had done that, they would have been on the easy... If he had scored, they would have been on the easy side of the draw. Yeah, he can't be the best player. The best player of the tournament was... I mean, look, Luka Modric is a fair winner. I think if you give it to Modric, yeah, he was exceptional. Another LN10, losing finalists, winning the World Cup, just like in Brazil. But no, I think you can't argue with Luka Modric. I think even Rakitic was a great shout. He was always like the steady hand behind Modric. He'll be letting him excel, or had actually excelled himself in the final, and Modric was a bit more low-key. Agree with Peter. Rakitic, Perisic and Mandzukic, great shouts. Very good, very, very important. Daniel Subasic as well. Huge in Croatia. I mean, he had a poor final, but he was really instrumental in them getting to the final. But, you know, the winner for me has to come from... I mean, it's Paul Pogba. I think Paul Pogba, Antoine Griezmann have to be one of the two shouts for me. Griezmann, as I said before, just, you know, was France's Harry Kane and Kieran Trippier in one person. You know, the set pieces, took all the penalties, took all the set pieces, set up so many goals. I think he was involved with more goals than any other player at the World Cup. Just, and that's not... I think that includes, technically, the own goal that he caused in the final. So important for them. Defended so willingly, so diligently, showed exactly... I mean, Diego Simeone must have been watching him with tears in his eyes. You know, this is what I've taught. This is a world-class striker, and he's standing 20 yards from his own goal defending every game willingly. It's like, you know, you can't... That's Diego Simeone. That's just pure genius. And then Pogba, for me, is the one, though. I would say Pogba, because he got better as the tournament went on. He started off on a strong foot, won them the opening game with the defensive shot against Australia, created the goal against Brew with his forward pass that Giroud almost scored with, and Mbappe eventually scored with. He unleashed Mbappe against Argentina. It was his forward passes that got the penalty, that just set the tone. And if Deschamps made some better subs, they would have killed Argentina in the first half. He found Griezmann for the Uruguay goal, the killing goal in that one. And Belgium was the only one he didn't really affect it too offensively. He was just defended very well. He helped shut down Belgium very well defensively. And then the final, of course, he was the best player on the pitch. Defended, attacked, moved the ball forward, unleashed Mbappe repeatedly with amazing passes.
Got his goal as well.
And scored a wonderful goal in the final. So for me, it's Pogba or Griezmann. I would lean Pogba, but I think if you say Griezmann, I wouldn't really have argued with you. Hard to argue Modric, because, I mean, who doesn't love Luka Modric?
Yeah, that's it. Will, would you go if you think Modric is the man? And actually, the other...
I think Mbappe would have got it if he wasn't eligible for young player.
And he was pretty much the only contender.
I think it was just a really easy sort of political decision. Political, obviously, in the sense of just being nice to everyone. But, just to sort of split those between those. One person I will mention, maybe more just because no one else mentioned it, but Eden Hazard was...
He was incredibly
insanely
good.
Good.
Very, very
he
good.
Genuinely staked his claim to be like the best dribbler on the planet. And like... And he's been sort of pushing. I know, obviously, you know, Messi's like heading that pack. But I think one stat that's like telling is that 40 dribbles Eden Hazard made at this World Cup, which is like almost double, I think. I'd have to check, but almost double the tally of any other player.
I think Messi has 28, so it's like 12 more.
Which is, I mean, he went further, so that's an explanation for that. But I mean, that's still like...
I think Hazard has been sensational. I thought Lukaku was very good. Like, scored four lovely goals group stage, and then in the knockout rounds just played a very selfless team role. But he was quite poor against France in the semi. That sort of holds him back. Hazard was just great consistently, and I think it's... Chelsea fans will be praying that Sadi can convince him to stay, because I mean, first off, he's excellent anyway. He could be even better in Sadi's system. But you know, he seems like he wants to play Champions League football. Another Courtois, another Chelsea player that probably wants to leave. Excellent again at the World Cup, Golden Gloves winner, rightfully so. Really, really, like, hugely impressive goalkeeper, not just a hugely, you know, sized man as well.
Exactly. Do you think I saw people tweeting about Modric for Ballon d'Or potentially just because he's won this, or do you think...
I mean, he's Madrid's guy now because Cristiano's gone to Madrid, so the Madrid media will go all in on Modric for the Ballon d'Or. I don't know if that'll be enough to swing the voters. Maybe, I mean, if they'd won it, certainly.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Maybe because they didn't win it, I don't know. I mean, you figure now the Italian media are going to go in for Cristiano now, so they're going to be behind him. The Ballon d'Or is basically a pointless award, but I'd imagine it's basically who can campaign the most effectively, which is why it's usually been a Madrid player that wins it. I think But look, I think if you're giving an award for Ballon d'Or, I would give it to Modric. This isn't 2017. Cristiano was not the best. He scored loads of goals, but he wasn't like the 2017 Cristiano where he was just constantly big moments, bang, rescuing Madrid. He was good. He was very good when they won the Champions League. Obviously, top scorer again. But I would go Modric for me. But if you have to pick a Ballon d'Or winner, or Griezmann.
Yeah.
Pogba didn't do well enough in club season. So I would say Griezmann or Modric for Ballon d'Or.
And then Mbappe one day, surely, as well.
I mean, next year, 2 years? I mean, yeah. It can't be far off.
No. 100%. And just moving on slightly in terms of the goal of the tournament, I think it was Belgium's winner by Nasser Chadli. I don't think anyone would have said that before the tournament. Nasser Chadli will score the best goal. But the winner against Japan got the BBC's vote. Peter, would you agree with that vote? And is there any other standout goals from the tournament? Obviously, got Lingard's versus Panama, Di Maria's versus France, quite a few good strikes as the tournament went on.
Yeah, for me, I don't want to dwell too much on Portugal, but it was Nacho's, I think it was his second goal, Nacho's goal for Spain against Portugal in the group stages.
The technique, really
on the edge there, just to slot it across the goal, for me, that was unbelievable. Again, that game, we saw Ronaldo's free kick. Trippier's free kick in the semi-final was just unbelievable. It was a band to witness. Again, you've got Lingard's. To be fair, we were treated to some fantastic football for a whole month, and on top of that, we saw some superb goals. Nasser Chadli's goal with the circumstances in which it was virtually the last kick of the game, and it was sort of rolled out by Courtois, and Belgium just broke and showed their excellence through there. So I think you could have probably picked about five goals which would have been named the official goal of the tournament. But yeah, I mean, take your pick in terms of which one you could have had.
Will, which one did you think?
Pavard, definitely.
Yeah.
I think Pavard. The Nacho shout is interesting. Those goals were really similar. I think Nacho kind of has that in off the post about some of the other side. But I think Pavard's, just because that angle was glorious.
So it's also,
that angle from behind.
It's also the moment, isn't it? Like,
exactly, you could say that's France's sort of dying piece turn moment.
It really was.
Made the World Cup possible.
Without that, they were losing Argentina. If Argentina go like 10 minutes without conceding a goal. Yes. Mm. But no, for me, I mean, I would Pavard is obviously a very good shout. Chadli, I love as well. Great team goal. I love team goals.
Mm.
Messi against Nigeria was quite nice in terms of pure technique. But, I mean, it has to be Quaresma against Iran, doesn't it? Like, surely, this 32-year-old finally scoring his first goal at a World Cup, and it's his signature goal. It's the Trivella. It's a beautiful, wonderful goal. Should have won Portugal the group, but Cristiano missed that penalty. I would go with... I mean, I would normally say Chadli. I've been saying Chadli, but now the more I've been thinking about it, Quaresma needs some love, man, because that was just beautiful. That was like, finally, Ricardo, you've done it at a World Cup.
Nobody mentioned Kane's incredible flick, which is quite strange. But, it's linked to this, but in terms of, Peter, I'll come to you again. Your favourite moment of the World Cup, obviously, it's more than likely going to be England-focused because it's been our second best finish at the World Cup. We also lost three games, though. I think only three teams to do that. So plenty of ups and downs, but like some incredible moments as an England fan during this tournament. I don't know if you want to pick one out in particular.
Yeah, well, it's never a dull journey with England. I think for me, the whole journey, actually experiencing a World Cup or a major tournament where you actually enjoy it for once as an England fan, the whole journey was magic. I think it started off with Kane's last-minute winner against Tunisia, kind of set the tone. For me, my one moment was Kieran Trippier's free kick, and I briefly mentioned it there, against Croatia, which just made the whole journey worthwhile. And it was my first chance to celebrate England scoring in a not just a World Cup, but a major tournament semi-final for the first time. And to be done in such a way was amazing. And I've never felt such sort of elation watching my country during that moment. You know, there was that time, I think it was the fifth minute we scored, was it? Fifth or sixth minute?
Yep.
And for 2 minutes or the first half then, I kind of genuinely believed that I'd be watching England in the World Cup final. Clearly it wasn't to be, but the 45 minutes where I could kind of dare to dream was just, it made it worthwhile. So yeah, for me, Kieran Trippier's free kick.
I think we can't argue with that. It was definitely a euphoric moment across the country. Will, have you got a particular moment? Is it England related, or is he going to steer away from that? It's too painful.
This one's just occurred to me. What was it? So Morocco 2, Spain 2.
Yep. Was it?
Was it this game? The throw-in? The volley-poly throw-in feint? Was it Mohamed?
No, that was
Iran, wasn't it?
That was Iran against Spain.
Yeah.
Iran against Spain.
Yeah.
That moment, that was...
they gained quite a lot of fans from that moment, didn't they?
He's linked to like Rangers and Celtic now. Because I saw it in the papers the other day. I don't know why. I don't know if that's had any bearing. But I mean, that's...
He's never got any clue how well he played. He just can throw in like that.
So that was great. Penalty shootout, winning the first penalty shootout. That would probably be it. If we'd lost that would have been England would be the first team to lose four penalty shootouts in World Cup history.
And that would have felt like, that's the most nervous I've ever been for an England.
And it looked to be going that way. Like the minute that game went to extra time.
Yeah. And then when Henderson missed, you just thought, here we
exactly,
go again.
Yeah.
The only good thing Eric Dyer did all tournament.
It basically was, yeah.
Milad Mohammadi was the guy who took this throw in. Really, really, I mean, just, I love it. It was great comedy. But no, the best moments for me, there's three of them. They're all related to France. Pogba doing his sajda after the semi-final was nice. Pogba's mum lifting the World Cup after the final. And Pogba's mum dabbing with Pogba and his two brothers with the World Cup in his hand. I just think...
He got the French president doing it as well, didn't he?
He got everyone. His Instagram thing after the tournament was sensational. Look, he's... Pogba has endured, I think, apart from Raheem Sterling, Pogba, there's no one that's endured more undeserved criticism than, you know, and baseless, basically race-based criticism than Paul Pogba. Like, people criticise him, why? Because he's black and he exists. You know, so it's like, it's ridiculous. And it's just so nice to see him not just succeed, right, just to rub it in the face, but just because he's such actually a down-to-earth and humble kind of guy. It's like this idea they've got of him because he has funky haircuts every now and again. It's preposterous. And it was just so nice to see him succeed, but do so in such a complete way. Like, he played well. He didn't have to justify anything to anyone, but he did. And that's what was so satisfying about it. He played brilliantly, defended well, attacked well, scored a goal, helped his country out, led his country, really. Was just the best player on the pitch in a World Cup final. And it's just like, you know, you say what you want about him. He's 25 years old and he's done that. How many other players can say they've been the best player in the world, best player on the pitch in a World Cup final at the age of 25?
How optimistic are you that his performances at the World Cup will lead to the Mourinho-Pogba dilemma?
I mean,
finally getting that resolution. It's, because I would say that the Premier League title race next season might hinge on that question, basically.
I would agree with you. Look, it all depends on one thing. Is Jose Mourinho going to play Fred at the base of midfield? Because Nemanja Matic is, God, how can I say this? He's not very good, okay? He's good at tackling people, but he moves the ball so slowly from the base of midfield that when Pogba plays there, Mourinho already hates the first station pass. If you don't know what that is, that's the pass from the defence centre-backs to the defensive midfielder to start attacks in the middle of the pitch. Basically, the one pass that all teams that play passing football do, Mourinho hates that pass. He tells his players not to play it. Because he thinks that's where you can press the defensive midfielder. But the thing is, if your defensive midfielder isn't a clogger, then it's perfect because you draw pressure in. Defensive midfielder bypasses them. Hey, presto, you're beaten the first line of press. You know, so that's where Fred can actually help. Because I mean, Matic can't beat that part. Matic can't beat that press. Gets overwhelmed very easily. Very one-footed. Fred still one-footed, but very, very, very good at breaking the press, at passing forward. If Fred plays at the base of midfield behind Paul Pogba regularly, he can unleash Paul Pogba. Mourinho himself, you know, it's not really about whether Mourinho wants Pogba to do well or not. Mourinho wants to win trophies, right? Mm. So as long as he can find a way to do that, and that involves letting Paul Pogba attack more, he'll run with that. It's just a matter of whether he can figure out, hey, play Fred at the base of midfield, or whether it'll take him 6 months to realise that, because by then the league could already be gone. If he realises that very quickly, you have to play Fred at the base of midfield. Matic can play, but Matic has to play further forward. Fred has to play at the base. If he can realise that, then yeah, I think that can sort of, not fix, but like it can really go away to making the two players work together. Do you know what I mean? But just one more thing. You're never going to play as hard for your club as you do for your country. Unless you are just naturally like that sort of like bull in a china shop kind of player like Kante, it's never going to be the same. You know, your club cannot replace your country. You see that from every player at the World Cup. There's like maybe a handful of players in the world who play the same intensity for club and country. Otherwise, it's just, you can't, your club ain't your country. You know?
Exactly. So, it's, I mean, hopefully we do see the best of Pogba. It'll be good for the Premier League. It'll be good for everyone. Because as he proved, I mean, I think even Roy Keane said he can dance all he wants if he's won the World Cup.
He's got Keane's permission.
He's got a license to do what he wants.
He's got Keane's permission. That's the thing, is that Keane will let you do anything you want as long as you won the trophy.
Exactly
first.
That.
Like, yeah, Keane doesn't, that's the funny thing about Keane, because he comes off like such a really grumpy old man, and he kind of is, but it's only because he's like got this. He had such a lucky
run. He means well.
Yeah, he means well, but it's just like he's got such a, like, if England had won the World Cup, he would be he would have hated it, but he would have also been like totally 100% like said, yeah, right, you do what you want. Yeah, England, do what you want. Say all you want, do what you want, because his mentality is this winner thing. Like, if you win, you can do what you want, basically. And it's kind of weird and old schooly, but you can tell he spent a lot of time with Sir Alex Ferguson, Brian Clough. You know, it's like, you can tell those are the two main influences of his life. If you win, say what you want. If you don't win, shut up. Keep your mouth shut.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Pogba won, so he can say whatever
he
wants.
What he likes. Just to round off this sort of mini review, Peter, I don't know if, is there any sort of the biggest shocks that happened during the tournament in terms of maybe the outright markets or in terms of who made the final and stuff like that? I don't know if you can pick out a couple, potentially.
Well, I think if you're looking at shocks, I think one of the big ones, or the biggest for me, was Germany not making it past the group stages. Obviously, I don't think many people expected South Korea to beat them and knock out the holders, should I say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was a huge shock. I think... I was going to say Spain going out. I think it was it the quarters that they went out, or the last 16 against Russia. So Spain not particularly going out on penalties, but more so probably Russia's progression to the quarters. I think they started the tournament as the lowest ranked FIFA team, then went on to the quarterfinals in quite emphatic fashion in the end, granted through penalties, but at the same time that was a big shock as well. I think as well you would have looked at Modric at the start of the tournament to be the golden ball winner, and I think a lot of people would have kind of turned their noses up at that. So I think, again, obviously as the tournament progressed, it's not so much of a surprise, right, yeah. But I think you'd be laughing all the way to the bank if you backed Modric to win the golden ball at the start of the tournament.
Yeah, so I suppose Kane, the golden boot as well. A lot of people mentioned him, but probably didn't think England would go that far. But funnily enough, he didn't score that many goals in the latter stages, did he?
Can we not get into the golden predictions? Because my two picks were Gabriel Jesus and Timo Werner, who scored a grand total of 0 goals. But no, look, Kane winning the golden boot was great. It was a nice surprise, especially because he didn't really play well in the tournament. Like, didn't really have a good game. Maybe for like the first half against Colombia, he was good, and then that was it. He was just kind of there. But it goes to show you just what you can do if you're good at, like, if you're a real striker like Kane, you score 6 goals at World Cup without playing well. Mm. Like, imagine what would happen if he'd played well, or if he hadn't got injured in Colombia and played the last 2 games of the tournament, or 3 games of the tournament, with very clearly carrying an injury. Mm. Like, could England have gone further? Probably? Maybe? I don't know.
I suppose he can't take a golden boot winner.
No, I mean, he'll be delighted. He loves, I mean, I've not seen a player so obsessed with scoring goals and gold trophies as him, which that sounds like a criticism. It's not, because that's how Cristiano has 450 goals in 438 games for Real Madrid. Mm. That hunger for goals is what's going to make Kane one of the world's best strikers if he's not there already.
So it's certainly been a World Cup, plenty of ups and downs, lots of shocks, lots of excitement, and we've thoroughly enjoyed it, it's safe to say. Okay, next up, we're going to look at some transfers. Obviously, the World Cup is now done. Premier League season not too far away. Lots of rumours, lots of completed deals. And kind of has to happen pretty quickly after the World Cup because the transfer window closes in 20-odd days, I think it is. First one, Jorginho to Chelsea, Mo. Man City probably thought they got him at one point. They didn't. So have they massively missed out? And do you think he'll be a big player for Chelsea?
A, yes, they have. B, oh my God, yes. City have been absolutely... It's so funny, they won the Premier League and they were the best team in the country. Best team the country has seen since, I would argue, probably 2009, if not 1999 or 2004. And yet, they've been gazumped by United and Chelsea, both of whom were, frankly, kind of boring to watch last season. And, you know, they've taken their... You know, first Fred, United took Fred, and then City have taken Jorginho. Mm. It's crazy. And, I mean, it seems like with Jorginho, it's almost like Chelsea did everything but kidnap the guy and force him to come... Napoli did everything but kidnap him and say, go to Chelsea. You're going to Chelsea. You know, it's like, it's almost like Sadi said, look, I'm not going to Chelsea without this guy. Yeah, which absolutely. Is basically, I wouldn't surprise me if that's what's happened, because there's no one at Chelsea that can do what he does. This guy completed 3,197 passes in Serie A last season. Mm. 3,000. He attempted over 100 passes in 15 games last season.
Crazy.
50. The highest in Premier League was Otamendi with 11, and that was playing for City at the back. So he's just pink. Jorginho at the base of midfield, 100 over 15 times. 170 was his highest. 170 passing against Benevento. He is perfect for what Sally does, and he's essential for what Sally does. You can't play Kante at the base of midfield in a Sally system. You can play him on the right in an Allen sort of role, but without Jorginho, you can't play Sally football. That kind of player, Jorginho, Busquets. Amadou Diawara, you know, and you're not going to get Busquets, and Jorginho is better than Diawara, so he's the guy you get. Phenomenal signing. He's going to run the Chelsea midfield as long as the rest of the players fall into line and actually go with... I mean, because Sally can be quite a hard taskmaster. Mm-hmm. As long as he can convey his tactics to them and convince them and get them on board. Oh, mate, Jorginho, that's going to be such a good signing. I feel bad for Arsenal, Lucas Torreira, because he must have been like, I'm the signing of the summer. And then City were like, no, mate.
He was for a couple of days, maybe.
Yeah.
Peter, in terms of Chelsea, I mean, it's kind of... I'm presuming they're kind of outsiders for the title and stuff, but obviously normally when they change their manager and bring stuff in, they, you know, a trophy's around the corner sometimes. So I don't know where Chelsea sit in the outright market for the Premier League at this stage.
Well, yeah, it seems to be the Abramovich way, and as you say, new manager syndrome seems to work often enough for Chelsea. No Champions League again this year, but obviously they've got the Europa. So 11-1 for the outright Premier League title this time around at the moment, Chelsea. Probably a fair enough price, bearing in mind it might have been a bit disruptive having Conte at the start, albeit for a week or a couple of days during the pre-season. And Sarri might take a little bit of time to kind of get his way, as you said, implement his methods and his tactics to the players. So, yeah, 11-1, fair enough price. Man City there, who obviously missed out on Jorginho, 4-6 favourites, based on last year's performance, as you say, and how emphatically they won the league. That's probably a fair price as well. So, Chelsea, a lot to do to sort of shorten the price themselves, but clearly, very well thought of, and hopefully changes things for Chelsea's sake.
Absolutely. And moving on to the next transfer, Will, I'm coming to you for this one. Shaqiri is a Liverpool player. What role do you see him playing sort of under Klopp, and do you think it's a good addition to the squad?
Yeah, 13 million, it's a steal. I think it's one of those low-key ones that's not going to send Twitter into a frenzy. But he's a talented player. They've obviously got a deal on him because of, I think, a relegation clause, presumably. Mm-hmm. He's just going to be another creative influence, maybe a sort of Sadio Mane than a Mohamed Salah. He'd be playing a bit further away from goal. Mm-hmm. Last season for Stoke created 77 chances, mm-hmm. which is more than any Liverpool player, actually. Right. That is, of course, mostly down to the fact that everything Stoke did creatively flowed through him. Mm-hmm. He was their talismanic presence. And the other interesting stat on him, no Premier League player scored more goals from outside of the area. And he's got 5, joint with De Bruyne. And the one thing, maybe the only thing Liverpool appear to have missed since Coutinho left is a player who's
bang one in.
He's like sort of willing and able to sort of, you know.
I think it's a really good transfer. I think you look at what Liverpool lacked last season. Like Will says, after Coutinho left, it was long range shooting, it was long range passing. He can do both of those. Not long range, but like outside the box, top of the box, sort of threading the ball through. He can do that. And more than anything, it just means you don't have to play Mohamed Salah or Sadio Mane all the time. You can actually rest them and not completely destabilise your front line, which is huge for Liverpool if they actually want to mount a title challenge.
I was going to say, and on that note, Peter, have they title odds for Liverpool? I think obviously they came close to the Champions League last season, not quite there in the Premier League, but do you think they'll be up there?
Exactly. Well, they are up there. They're second favourite at 5-1, which I think is actually quite a good value price. As you say, they've made nice additions. They'll learn and sort of improve from their Champions League campaign last year. I think it'll be far tighter this year in terms of the title. I don't think Man City will run away with it like they did last year. I think the team to give them the biggest shout so far would be Liverpool. So 5-1, a decent price for them as well, I think.
Absolutely. And then the next one is an interesting one because West Ham are basically playing football manager, aren't they? They just throw money around. Felipe Anderson has gone there. I think the question is nicely put, to be honest, because it's like, will they trouble the European spots or will they end up being sort of a bit like Everton were? Because obviously Everton... Last summer, everyone said Everton's transfer business is amazing, and then they struggled. So, where do you see West Ham going? Improvement or top 10?
I think improvement. Everton signed a load of players to play the same position, and no one had any pace. West Ham have signed players with pace, and they all play different positions. So, I think it's very. And also, Fabianski is a very good pickup. Arsenal should have got him back, man. Bernd Leno is not the one. Fabianski is a very good pickup, very, very good goalkeeper last season. I think he'll do really well for them. Having a goalkeeper that can actually save shots would be transformative, really, when you think about it, compared to Joe Hart. I think, Felipe Anderson is, it's hard to really quantify this because it's like, he was a really hot prospect a few years ago, then sort of for some reason no one signed, I think because Lazio just wanted too much money, no one signed him, and no one sort of realised, this guy's amazing. Last season he completed more take-ons than any other player, any other Lazio player in Serie A, right? 77, despite playing literally over 1,000 minutes less than every other player. Mm. Like he's injured for half the season, or barely featured for half the season, and then came in second half of the season and just destroyed everyone else. He's a dribble merchant. You know, to use Lat Parlance. He dribbles a lot. He tackles a lot. He's very good pressing. Very good at pushing the ball high up. He can lead West Ham's defense. He's an X factor. As long as he settles into living in England, I think he'll be. Which I mean, I imagine he will be. There's enough Brazilians in London. He could, you know. Mm.
Oh yeah, I think Felipe Anderson. That's a coup. I could have seen him go Spurs or somewhere like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You look at his profile statistically, and it's sort of as Mo said, loads of take ons. Injured for like half of last season, but the season before, most dribbles for Lazio, I believe, and most tackles. He's a player who plays in advanced areas and excels in one-on-one duels and that sort of thing.
And also, they've got a good manager as well who knows the Premier League, so it's not as if they've got someone coming in.
Yeah, I think that's almost the biggest factor.
Yeah, I agree.
Because with Everton, you gave a lot of money to Ronald Koeman, who's a good coach but doesn't play very expansive football, that's going to satisfy the type of high-profile signings that your new owners have given you the money to go out and buy. So someone like Pellegrini, who's used to managing some exceptionally talented and creative players.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the thing. If you look at Malaga, what Koeman needed to play Koeman football is very fast wingers and a target man. And Everton's wingers were injured. Well, their one winger was injured. Then they'd sold their target man, didn't replace him, and then gave him a bunch of slow number 10s.
Yeah, it was the failure to sign Giroud, I think.
Yeah. If they'd signed Giroud and maybe one other winger, they would have been pretty good, I think. They didn't have a target man, and without target man, you can't play Koeman football. Now, Pellegrini's much more malleable, much more adaptable, and, you know, he does brilliantly with this level of club, West Ham. You know, they are the Malaga, Villarreal level of club. Look what Pellegrini did with Villarreal. Miracles with Villarreal. Villarreal, the town, is about as big as Macclesfield, right? And he took them to the Champions League semi-finals. Malaga... Malaga's not known for football, took Malaga to the quarterfinals, although that was a bit different because he had a very good team there with Isco and Cazorla and Monreal and that. But look, the man's a genius. He's very, very good with the clubs. It's like Rafa Benitez going to Newcastle. That's the perfect size club for him. He's not an elite club manager, not anymore. You know, Rafa was for Liverpool, but that was back before Pep Guardiola changed football. Now, in this current age, Rafa's perfect. Newcastle, perfect sort of level for him. Big upper mid-table sort of club. And I think with Vera, I think West Ham... Maybe not this season, but I think if they don't panic and sack Pellegrini, I think next season they could be really good, pushing for European spots. Mm-hmm. This season they'll be solidly mid-table, improving. Yeah, he's a brilliant coach. I think maybe even he'll get the best out of Wilshire.
I think the Benitez comparisons are quite interesting. Because this seems to be a trend. It's like sort of big-ish name managers going to big clubs and just getting dogs abuse. And then just go into a club with like a really sort of passionate fan base so they can go and be loved.
Yeah, especially with the amount of money in the Premier League as well. Clubs like Newcastle and especially West Ham have a lot of money to spend as well.
I mean, it doesn't seem to be the case so much for Newcastle.
Well, I mean, they have it. They just don't want to spend it, are they? Yeah. But, you know, the those two coaches are really, really brilliant coaches. And I think putting them at these clubs... And this is the thing, English clubs Peter Principle a lot of coaches, I think. Whereas I think now those guys, I mean, Pellegrini was at Man City because he was just a good coach and they needed someone to hold them over till Pep showed up. Mm. So Pellegrini was a good coach, did very well for them, but the level now, this is the perfect level for him. I think he's going to, as long as West Ham don't panic, I mean, Benitez has shown Newcastle has shown, stuck with Benitez and given him, not all of what he wants, but like at least some of what he wants. Mm. And it's paying off. And if they gave him what he asked for, they would finish seventh. He's that good. And I think same thing West Ham, if they give Pellegrini what he wants, if they sign the players he wants, I'm sure he wants some more players, I'm sure he wants a centre half.
Yeah, he's made a good start in that regard. Yeah. I suppose
I think West Ham can be seriously good next season. This season as well, they'll probably be pretty good. But Pellegrini's going to be a very good coach for them if they can stick with him.
And Peter, have you got any thoughts on West Ham in terms of after a busy summer? Do you think they'll be up there, or do you think they'll be, you know, say, in trouble again?
Well, it's one of those, you always get a kind of Everton or a West Ham or whoever every season who go out and spend and try and kind of compete or have a campaign to go and qualify for Europe. Again, time will tell. They could end up being absolutely unbelievable. They could end up firing him after 2 months because it just hasn't worked. It's obviously there's a lot of time to fill between now and the start of the Premier League season. And I mean, the easy answer is only time will tell. I think they've made a lot of positive signings. I think Wilshere is a great addition to them. I think Anderson will be another fantastic addition. Pellegrini, again, he's a Premier manager in the Premier League. Unlike Koeman, who I think needed probably at least one season to kind of implement his style and his philosophy on Everton, at Man City, Pellegrini was used to kind of going out, buying or playing with a lot of individuals and kind of basically having a quick turnaround in terms of implementing what he wanted to be to get done. So I think it's, I think for bearing in mind or following on from the disappointing start to their time at the London Stadium, the kind of disappointment amongst West Ham fans at the moment. I think they've got a lot to look forward to, a lot to get excited about. But again, as football fans will tell you throughout the Premier League, you know, don't get too ahead of yourselves because you never know what could happen. It might go fantastically. Otherwise, you know, it might not. We will see. But I think on the whole, it's all good for West Ham at the moment.
So yeah, very exciting times for them, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to discuss between now and the start of the season. But for now, that's just about all we've got time for. Thanks to Mo, as always.
Thanks, Thomas. For the last time this season.
World Cup! And thanks to Will.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Stick and safer.
Yeah. And I've not got a catchphrase to plug.
And Peter, thanks for having... It's good to have you with us again. Thank you very much, mate.
No worries, guys. Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys. We'll speak to you again soon.